Hello and welcome to Things Musicians Don't Talk About with your hosts Hattie Butterworth
and me, Rebecca Toll.
Within our vibrant musical world, it can often feel that the struggles and humanity of musicians is lost and restricted.
Having both suffered in silence with mental, physical and emotional issues, we are now looking for a way to voice musicians' stories, discuss them further and to connect with the many others who suffer like we have.
No topic will be out of bounds as we are committed to raising awareness for all varieties of struggle.
So join me, Hattie and guests as we attempt to bring an end to stigma by uncovering the things musicians don't talk about.
Musicians Don't Talk About is supported by the Royal Society of Musicians. Since 1738, they have been providing vital financial assistance, advice, and guidance to music professionals unable to work due to accident, illness, stress, or anxiety. Whether you're working as a performer, administrator, technician, or teacher, and everything in between, they're there to help. If you know of someone in need, you can contact them in confidence by visiting their website, which is www.rsmgb.org, or you can contact them by ringing 020 7629 6137. Support their work by becoming a member or donating today. So by the time we're recording this, by the time this comes out, we have 3,000 Insta followers.
Unless they all unfollow us right now.
That is true. I was thinking if we hit 3,000 and then we release this episode and everyone hates it, and then we go back below 3,000, do we release another episode when we hit 3,000 again?
No, okay. That's not what happens.
Also, we're not really... I don't know why I picked 3,000 Insta followers as like the next kind of thing. Because we're not really chasing followers. But it feels substantial. In some way.
We're not chasing followers at all.
We do love you all. It just feels like an achievement from something that's very organically grown. Yeah, how does it make you feel to have 3,000 followers having started it from zero, as most places start?
This might sound a bit pious, but I don't really have an opinion.
Nice.
It's nice. I'd feel more happy about if I knew like how many people listened.
Yeah,
I get more of a buzz from knowing how many people listen rather than how many people follow on Instagram, because it's a bit different. But I know the Instagram's had a big impact for some people.
All your TikToks.
Well, that's a very different kettle of fish. TikTok, bless it. What is going on over there?
Have you posted any more videos?
Yeah, I've posted two more videos.
Oh my gosh, OCD advice.
Yeah, which is, and it's like heartbreaking, but at the same time, wonderful that there's this kind of weird sub-community of this very niche type of OCD, which clearly no one talks about. And I'm like, is this not really relevant because it's not really anything to do with music, but at the same time, like, who gives a fuck? Like, clearly people find a lot of, what's the word?
Solace.
That's the word.
I think also the fact that you are in music and you are talking about it is still pretty impressive.
Yeah, I'm very protective of everyone with OCD because it's just such a like horrible place to be that I do get quite upset, or like I really feel the emotion in the people that write back on TikTok. Because I'm like, oh, I remember feeling like that. That's so sad. Where they're like, please help me. What can I do? I'm really struggling right now. Like, they sound so desperate, everyone that writes. And like, because it does feel so desperate. Anyway, so that's a whole different thing. And I'm quite scared to bring that onto Instagram. It's interesting. I don't love... Obviously, I did a bit of OCD stuff on Instagram, but TikTok feels safer. It feels like it reaches more people, basically.
We've also talked about this before, where it doesn't feel like on TikTok a lot of the people that we know or that is a bit more anonymous somehow.
It's funny. I like that. I like it for that. Because I know the algorithm is way better in terms of it will reach the people who are struggling with this type of OCD somehow. So that's good.
Somehow. The magic.
Magic.
So we have a couple of questions.
We do.
For this episode. A little Q&A. So from Holly, we have the question, how can you please recount the story of how TMDTA became a duo? Yeah. So you were starting it in lockdown.
But as it became a duo.
Yeah, yeah. I'm giving a bit of backstory.
No one cares about the backstory.
I care so much. So you're doing it by yourself. Yeah. And it became a bit kind of emotionally overwhelming. And you'd gone through a few dips in motivation with it and weren't really... you took a break as well. And then you came back to it and...
I was still, like, really struggling, basically, with my mental health.
And actually, I remember this today, that you put a call out for people to help with the podcast. And I replied... And you added us all to a big WhatsApp group. And I was like, fuck this. I don't want to be just one of a bunch.
I know. And I realised that as well.
I just kind of left it. I wanted to feel special, okay? And you then
special.
And then you got in touch after my interview.
Yeah.
Saying, hey, baby, I think we have similar things in mind.
Well, we did like a... live, an Instagram live for
like World Mental Health
World
Day
Mental
or
Health Week or Mental Health Awareness Week or something.
Yeah, that's so true.
Because I think we'd been messaging,
yeah,
sort of like quite like-mindedly.
Yeah.
We
just kind of, and then you said kind of a bit more, like, would you like to be on board? I said yes.
It was so cute.
Amazing.
I'm such a no-brainer though. It was like, I guess how people talk about
business,
moving in together or whatever, where they're just like, there was no kind of real decision. It just was so obvious to me that it needed to happen.
I remember telling Stu and being so excited about it. I was like, Hattie asked me to be on the podcast. Like,
I remember him messaging me actually.
Really?
Yeah.
About what?
He messaged me and said, this is the first time I knew that you were called Becca. I didn't realise that you had like that nickname. He was like, Becca's been telling me all about how excited she is for the podcast.
Aww.
It was really cute.
That is really cute.
And I was like, oh, she goes by Becca.
Secrets Marvelous. Are coming out now.
Great to know.
And then we kind of just got started from there. And I recorded an episode by myself first.
We still hadn't met.
No, we hadn't met until...
No, we did one together.
Ellie Consta.
No, as in we did a chatty one together.
Oh, did we?
Yeah, about leaving music college.
Oh.
You basically told me how to find teaching work.
Oh, I don't remember that.
It's called something like leaving music college, leaving conservatoire, fearing suicidal thoughts or something. Yeah. It's quite deep.
That's us.
We
in
went
a nutshell.
Right in.
Yeah.
We
no
went
messing about.
Right in. And yeah. Then
we started having big plans. Like, that was the year that we did Injury Awareness Week.
Mad.
And that was the first time we met in person.
That September before then.
Oh.
Because I was on you just come back from Lucerne. You just had Fasulca the baby.
Oh, that's so true.
And I was like, can I come and stay? I haven't met you yet, but can I come and stay? And you were like, sure. And I slept on your floor. It was so cute.
Yes.
And Fasulca was literally a month or 2 months old.
Yeah.
It was adorable.
And then we've just been there.
And Stuart bought me Temple of Satan.
This is before diabetes.
Everything
before diabetes.
Yeah, I didn't think you were going to say that, but yeah, I guess so.
Before everything, really.
Before you had to inject before Temple of Satan.
Yeah, I was just thinking about the food, and like I thought you were going to say, like, Stuart bought me something sugary. I was like, no, that would have been way before.
Well, it's just pure gluten, isn't it? Bless Temple of Satan.
That might have been what got you.
He was like, oh, I'll buy it for you because I'm being paid to be on holiday at the moment from the Royal Academy of Music because he just finished, I think, his job there.
That's so true, and he had all his holiday pay to go.
Gosh, all these tiny little niche details.
So funny. Anyway, that's how we became a duo, and we just kept going and clinging on to it since then.
Mad.
Anything else you want to add?
You were going to say something about posting on Instagram.
Oh, yeah, just because... often we make a joke about how we met because I was also kind of posting deep stuff on Instagram and people connected us.
Nobody, yeah, it was like there are only two classical, I was going to say classical cunts, but maybe I shouldn't say that.
Classical on the main music feed. People who are really ill and putting it online.
Yeah. And I did think, wow, I cannot believe this woman is so open about her eating disorder. It felt very... I know you said you were following people who were doing similar things, but like, I think in our world, it felt incredibly rare.
Mm.
And I was like, this must be a really special person.
Aww.
Because I knew that it was really hard to open up about that sort of thing. Yeah. And because you were doing it so regularly and so like authentically, I was like, well, she must also have this kind of like vocational drive to do this. Mm. Yeah,
I definitely went in and out of phases of being like, I want to make this like a bigger thing.
Yeah.
And like try and not become like an influencer in terms of like numbers or
free trips or whatever.
Yeah, or anything, but just like in terms of it being like a regular sort of
support.
Yeah, and reaching out, like making sure that people find it through being a bit bigger.
Yeah.
But I also was guilty of putting things online as a form of validation and kind of not trauma dumping, but trauma like flushing almost.
Yeah.
Like I can't remember the first time I posted really openly online about it, but I remember feeling such a rush of validation that people like appreciated it. I think particularly because my mental health had always been weaponized against me at music college or in relationships or friendships or whatever, that it actually felt for the first time that I was being kind of applauded for it.
And, oh my God, it's and so true.
Reaching people outside of my immediate circles that seemed to appreciate it rather than being like, well, this is clearly why you had this problem and you know,
wow, yeah,
you're a mess and whatever. So it felt really special, but it was definitely intertwined with kind of, yeah, the trauma of it being used against me previously.
Mm.
And now it was being used for me as a way to support other people and myself. But yeah, I mean, it's so funny looking back at that time and now I think how almost desensitized I am to posting something. I still get a bit of like, worry that I'm not going to word something right or that it's going to be too much or that people are going to see it as attention seeking or whatever, but nowhere near as much as I used to.
Yeah, because that will happen, you know.
Yeah, I think I used to be so much more aware or like overly paranoid about what people were saying behind my back and kind of trying to imagine what that would be, and now I'm more accepting of, well, it will happen because that's just life and I don't really care what they say.
Yeah,
not in a way of like because they're wrong, but just because I know I'm never gonna know what they say.
Mm.
And even if I did, I don't want that to stop me doing what I'm doing.
Mm. I feel like there's still a lot of posts that I either write in my notes and never post or think about and don't feel the bravery to post.
Mm.
It's funny. Maybe you just post everything that comes into your head.
I think I get kind of big surges of, fuck, I really want to write about this.
Mm.
And I get such a big energy splurge where I'm like, okay, I need to write it. I need to post it. Because I'm like, if I feel that, then it must be right.
Yeah, that's but then so true.
Sometimes I don't think I think about it enough.
Yeah, me too. But
I, you know, we only live once.
There are some of them, though, that like, they'll be in my notes app for a few months and then it'll feel like the right time to post. I don't know. Maybe I've become more conscientious.
Maybe through your work.
Yeah, interesting. Although that was part of... I did this talk the other day at the Royal College about broadcasting and all that. And the one thing I did really notice and sort of find myself saying a lot was like, actually, I've never really changed what I put out there because of my work. Because they felt like all of the writing I'd done when I applied for that job was to do with mental health. Like, I've always been mental health from day one. So it's not like, it always felt like that kind of writing and journalism had been a superpower. So, and they, well, it feels like they took a risk with me, but.
Yeah, and they weren't expecting you to give it up. No.
But also, like, I don't think I realised it is impressive when people feel a calling to share and write in mm-hmm. the way that we do. And I think that that has transferred itself well into my other job. Mm. And I'm glad that it's not 20 years ago when they would have seen my diagnosis or openness and probably freaked the fuck out and,
yeah,
you know. So it's, I don't know where we'll go with that, but it's interesting.
Yeah, it's like, it's been, what, 4 years since you started the podcast?
Mm, in June, yeah.
And where you are now and where you are in relation to social media and me as well is so wildly different.
Yeah.
But still in the same vein of what I want to achieve and what you want to achieve, I imagine.
Yeah, I think the other thing I'm thinking of a lot more is when I post on social media, if I have someone on the brain that I'm posting for at that time, mm. I get people on the brain and I get, like, you know, obviously relationships and situations come up, or there might be someone who I know has recently followed.
Yeah.
And, like, I get them on the brain and I always almost write for them, and I kind of wish I could detach from that.
I know what you mean.
Because I'm like, I know they're going to see it, and if they don't like it, then I overthink it and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And part of me just wants to, like, screw the whole thing half the time.
Yeah. So second question comes from Macy A. Jagger.
Wow.
I mean, that could be how you say it. It could be Mac Jagger or Marcia Jagger.
It could be Mick Jagger.
It, oh my God. We've hit the big time.
Hello.
Well, Mick Jagger says, opinion on specialist music schools whilst at secondary school / sixth form.
Well, we are very qualified to answer this question.
Yes, we are.
For the context of Rebecca attending Wells Cathedral School from the ages of...
Year 10 to the end.
So for 4 years.
Yep.
And then I was at Cheatham's from years 12 and 13, so for sixth form. I applied to go earlier for years 10 and 11. And for me at the time, it felt like the world was ending, that I didn't get in.
Mm.
But now looking back... I find them quite problematic. I don't think I would send my child to one, personally.
Why?
Just because I think there's a lot of problems that haven't been sorted. There's a lot of people still employed that shouldn't be there. And I know they can tell us that they're doing things differently and changing things, but it's like, it's still an intense environment and these are still children we're talking about. And myself as a child, I was very, like, driven, but I was also very sensitive. And I don't know. I think I was lucky. I shouldn't be saying that, but I will. I was lucky that I didn't suffer more from the environment than mm-hmm. I did, because I watched a lot of suffering.
Mm.
And that still haunts me a little bit, like the people. And in hindsight, who's been arrested since I was there. And knowing all my friends in my year who had to deal with that person, and, like, mm-hmm. just knowing what must have been going on while I was there. It just all icks me out, and maybe I just need more time.
Mm.
But I would not send my child there at this moment in time. No way. What about you?
Yeah, it's complicated, because I feel similarly, that it's a very intense environment, often a boarding school, which is even more intense. And I can't imagine it getting any better with the state of the education system as well, on top mm-hmm. of, like, having to do GCSEs and all that other stuff. I don't imagine it's getting any easier to be a child in a specialist music school. I can only speak from my experience of being at a specialist music school that, I mean, in some aspects I was lucky that I was in the brass department, which was very friendly, very fun, and, like, less hours practice driven and perfectionistic. But I do think that there needs to be more I mean, it's kind of just like a mini music college, and I think so much of music college is so problematic in the way that you're not given space to try things and be creative and all the hero worship and all the things that we talk about all the time. I think because music specialist schools seem so driven towards getting people into music college without actually thinking, okay, but music college is quite problematic as well. But there's no other place they can necessarily funnel their music students into that's a better alternative. I think music specialist schools can often take on some of the problematic aspects of music college.
Definitely.
And at, you know, with people that are at a younger age, with the pressures of academic work and their parents and all these other things that are slightly less intense when you're 18 plus. However, I was reflecting on this in therapy the other day, that when I went to Wells, it was the first time that I felt like a normal student. Yeah. And I did get some of this in my county youth orchestra before I went to Wells, and the feeling of, oh, I'm not just a nerd, like I'm, you know, I'm surrounded by all these people that are funny and I think they're cool and they're really good at music, and I'm part of that crew. And like, I was always the youngest one at my youth orchestra, and then
little prodigy.
Yeah, I was a prodigy. No, I think I was just
a prodigy.
I practiced. I didn't even practice that much.
You're a prodigy. Let's move on.
Okay. Anyway, so I think I still had an element of being an outsider at County Youth Orchestra, but like, I didn't feel it negatively. It was just a fact of life. But then when I went to Wells, it was like, oh my gosh, this is it. Like, there are people my age accepting me. And
that's so true.
Yeah, just the whole kind of community felt very supportive.
That's so true.
But I think if I'd have stayed at County Youth Orchestra and just grown into it, I think I probably would have experienced that there too. So I think perhaps there would have been the opportunity to find that community not at a specialist music school.
But do you think you would have just... Because for me, I even went to a Saturday junior conservatoire.
Mm.
And even that, I felt like I just want this every day.
Mm.
I didn't like that I had to travel so far to get that.
That's true.
And I didn't like that I had to, you know, be so sort of structured about my practice in the week. I wish that I could have had that all done for me.
Mm.
And at Chet's, like, it was all done for me. And actually reminding me that, yeah, like, when I went to school, that was when I met to Chet's, that was when I met all my friends. Like, yeah. I didn't feel I really had any friends in the same way.
Yeah.
Like, I had people that I talked to and got on with, but it was almost like seeing colour for the first time. Like,
yeah.
You know, there was like a larger spectrum of like-minded people that I kind of didn't realise existed.
Yeah. And I wonder whether that's just more of a problem with peer groups, and like if I'd have felt less of an outsider in my school before Wells, I think the transition to somewhere where I felt so at home and so accepted wouldn't have been so great. It would have been it wouldn't have felt like such a homecoming going to Wells if I'd have had some sense of acceptance at my previous school, which was more to do with bullying and gender roles as well. Like, being a woman who played trumpet in my all-girls school was such a big point of contention, and just like having an interest in academics. I mean, I know that you can't fix all these things, and some of it is just a fact of being a teenager and a child and whatever, but there was definitely something to be said for the inclusion that I felt when I went to Wells.
What about the like eating disorders and mental health side of things as well, though? Because at Chet's, it was, I kind of developed an eating disorder in a kind of strange way, but it was very, very common. It felt like most of the girls in the sixth form would have some form of disordered eating, and then further down the school there were very extreme cases of like anorexia and stuff, and you would hear horror stories about which teachers had told people to lose weight, and it's kind of funny because you sort of think about the Royal Ballet School when you think about eating disorders, but it's like, is this a specialist school.
Where people, the professors and teachers want their students to be the one.
Yeah, exactly. So
they, any control they can have over them to make sure that they succeed,
yeah,
they'll take. I mean, I don't think that my eating disorders were brought on necessarily by it being a music school.
Yeah.
I think it was partly just what was going on at the time and it being a boarding school and me being a teenager who became obsessed with my body. And actually, I see the music side of that as very separate. And I think if I'd have stayed at my all-girls school and if I'd have boarded at an all-girls school, it probably would have been the same.
Mm.
But I didn't feel any pressure from my music teachers. I was very lucky with, well, I mean, not lucky. I mean, we say this all the time, but like they were very good teachers.
Yeah, and they supported you through in the way that they could.
I mean, I think there could have been more done about safeguarding and this kind of stuff, but that was to do with the school in general.
Yeah. I think probably having, with Wells not being completely consumed by music, I don't know. I think that draws certain people in to know that there is a sort of area of normality, even though obviously it's still a private school.
Well, that's the other thing, them being private schools, right?
Mm.
I think that in itself is almost wrong. Well, no, not almost wrong. It is wrong.
Yeah.
That there's this massive barrier to people becoming musicians.
Well, I mean, it's obviously very, very generously means tested.
For sure. But then there's still an expectation that you'll go on school tours or there's expenses that come with it despite you being means tested.
Yeah, that's true.
And just being a musician is expensive no matter what stage of your career you're at.
And you're also being like, oh, you know, the poor kids can come get this brilliant education, but it's like, but then they'll go to music college and when that's done, there'll be nothing waiting for them.
Yeah.
Because they'll have to tread water for 2 years auditioning.
Yeah.
And if they don't have a parental sort of bank of financial support, how are they going to do that? Like, that's impossible.
Oh, yeah, that's our opinions. Nice and clear. We're definitely for and or against.
Depending on the bloody child.
I mean, to be fair, like, I would be interested to see or to hear from current music school students. And I mean, particularly with the developments in, like, you know, questioning the canonization of music and
that's true,
and this, and like mental health support, and I imagine quite a few changes have taken, well, I would hope that some changes have taken place. I wonder how much the effects of them are being felt.
Did you play any music by women in Wales?
Nope.
You don't have to ask me that question because you know the answer.
Ethel Smythe?
No.
No. Oh, no, that's not true, actually. In my final year, I put on a...
Oh, so you did it yourself.
Awarded a recital that I did all female composers.
That's quite radical for, like, 2014 or whatever.
Yeah. Wow. Some of the music was bad, but it was a good idea.
It's not the point.
Yeah, it was a joint trumpet and percussion concert, and it was actually
that's cool.
Really good.
That's quite a cool combo.
Yeah.
Here for it.
Yeah.
You should do it again.
So our last question from an anonymous questioner is, I'm now in a position where I have some power over who is hired to work in my section. This involves making judgments about other people's playing, etc. How do I make and convey judgments with my section colleagues without descending into general bitchiness or being overly personal? Often I find I'm left with a slightly bitter taste after these conversations.
So this is basically coming from the perspective of someone being on, like, a jury for the first time.
I guess, or, like, maybe adding people to the extras list.
Okay.
Like, non-auditioned work, maybe.
Oh, I see. You're sort of talking about, oh, I've heard them, they're really good, or
maybe,
no, they're shit, they fucked up.
I guess in any case.
Yeah. What's your immediate thought?
Oh, it's so hard. I mean, I've obviously never been in that position.
You've never been a bitch in your life.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I meant. No, I've never been in the position where I've been able to give people work in that way. Obviously, I've been able to pass people's numbers on and recommend them for gigs, but I've never had a discussion with colleagues in a section that I'm regularly a part of, discussing people's actual playing.
What would you hope that discussion would be like?
I would hope that there would be some consideration from all involved, of giving people a chance, first and foremost. Not always picking the same extra players, which I know is difficult when you give somebody extra work regularly and they are considered to be one of your regular extras. But I would hope that people see age and experience as not necessarily a barrier to ability. I would hope that there would be some at least unspoken motivation to make sure that gender balance is readdressed, and racial balance, but that not in a tokenistic way, which I know is very hard, and that people feel comfortable, or people use their position of security in an orchestra to call out comments that are racist, sexist, homophobic, but that also question somebody's validity based on those characteristics, or like they're only here because they're XYZ.
But do you think the bitchery could also be just, I don't like, their personality, not necessarily a protected characteristic?
Yes, and also people just getting very into like the minutiae of playing and technique and stuff. I think most people could do most jobs.
Oh, well, you mean most freelance?
Yeah. I think if you're making a living as a freelancer, the likelihood is that you can, you're good enough to play in an orchestra. And yes, I know there are some solos and whatever that maybe a specific level of ability is required, but I think people often like to pick apart other players because that's the only thing that they can think of to like separate out, because everybody's good enough, they've got to pick on something to justify their position in that work almost.
I mean to me it strikes me as maybe if they're, I don't know, it sounds like there's a jury of maybe in my head maybe four or five, and it almost sounds like, are there two who are sort of ringleading the tone of the conversation, maybe one feeling like they can only connect with the rest of the group through, because often I find I connect with certain people through bitching, which I hate. There are certain like friends or acquaintances who for some reason they do not bring out a good side of me, and it's the same through work. Like there are certain press people or journalists who I talk to and I'm like, God, we just spend the whole time gossiping or bitching, like, and often you feel you have to talk in that way because you want to connect, and that feels like the only way they're open to connecting with you is through ripping people to shreds. And it's very hard to like be the person who doesn't go down that path.
Well, yeah, because you can often be seen as not the fun one if you're like, come on guys, like,
exactly, or like up yourself.
Yeah, like I can't think of many situations where I've been like privy to some bitching where I would have felt comfortable to be like, okay, like, let's give them a break, like, let's keep this professional and just genuinely try and base it on their merits rather than our personal opinions of them as a person or whatever, or like, actually my intention to bitch about this person is more about my insecurities about my own playing.
It's so true.
I actually don't know because I've never been in that position.
The only position similar I've been in has been on an interview panel hiring someone for a job, and I don't know whether it's because we all were very clear we needed someone very desperately, that we were sort of very positive about what their good areas were. And actually I remember bringing up some things I was concerned about and the other two being sort of like acting like I was bitching,
whereas it was just
Whereas concern. It was like, So there's kind of the other extreme of like, you want to feel like you can be completely open to like a broad discussion about what you want the role to do.
Yeah.
I don't know, in like a musician sense, like say it's principal cello or whatever, you want someone who's going to have a very confident, free sound in solos and a very, you know, very strong, I don't know, experience in leading sections. I don't know.
But I guess it is that thing of like, in that instance, you were so desperate to get somebody. Whereas in something like, I imagine, orchestral work, it's like, it's completely oversaturated.
True, yeah.
And it's almost like you don't need anyone. Like, you could, I mean,
yeah,
of course you need someone to fill that role, but it could literally be anybody.
But do you think this is where we worry, like on orchestra trials and stuff, about being, going to the pub and being fun? And because we, maybe this is the conversation they're having, is, oh no, I don't want them on our tour, like they're no fun, they'll just be in their room whole time. Or, oh come on, I know he's not very good, but like,
I think they said they're playing.
Okay.
About people's playing, etc.
Oh, okay.
But I think there's also this culture of not giving feedback in the moment. Like, people would rather say, oh, she plays really sharp behind their back, rather than saying like, oh, I've noticed that you could come down a little bit tuning wise, and just saying it. Like, because maybe it comes back to the fact that we connect our worth as human beings so much with our playing, that not only do people feel hesitant to give criticism or feedback at the risk of offending somebody, but also that we do actually tend to take it quite personally, because of this identity and playing intertwinedness. So I think if there was more of a culture of just being honest about feedback,
there wouldn't be so much of this kind of behind
bitchiness. Because it's like,
that's so shit.
You might say, oh, I don't like this about somebody's playing, but I could just tell them that, you know, in this section we tend to do it like this, is that something they can work on? And if they adapt, that's great. If they don't, maybe they're not the one, but at least you've said it to them.
Yeah.
And like, I can already feel myself like clenching at the thought of somebody giving me feedback in a rehearsal, but that's because it doesn't really happen, it's not normal.
Yeah, my gosh. And if that did happen, like, there were people who used to turn around and like give me feedback, and it would always really piss me off. Often because I felt like what place are they? Like, our second desk of cellos, inside player. Why are they turning around to tell me what to do? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But again, that's connected so much to your worth as a person, rather than just like, this is my job, I'm just doing a job. Like, I actually wouldn't want to be where they are anyway.
God, it just sounds like youth orchestra continued.
Literally.
It sounds dreadful. I don't know. I don't know how you would navigate that, because, yeah.
But I also think there needs to be more of a, not, sounds so stupid, but more of like an HR department for players to be able to voice their concerns anonymously, or, I don't know what I'm trying to say. Like, I don't have a solution, but I feel like if you have a complaint or a concern within your section, it's so much harder to fix than if you were in a department in like an office.
Definitely.
Not that I have much experience, but I have
It's just true. It's just true. Because that's what they're there for. And whether or not it's comfortable.
Yeah, to mediate things.
There's someone there. Yeah. Yeah, it's so true.
Anonymous feedback box.
What?
What?
Well, this has been very enlightening, actually.
Yeah. Lovely.
Congrats on 3,000.
Yeah, you too.
Are we doing any sort of win of the week?
Yeah, let's do a win of the week.
All right.
Oh, shit.
You go first.
Oh, I guess I could talk about the poem, spoken word thing that I did.
That was amazing.
Which is technically within the past week, I think. I've been trying to explore my non-musical creativity more, and get more comfortable with at least thinking about myself as a creative rather than just a trumpet player. So I've been going through The Artist's Way, classic. And it's actually been really enlightening to feel like I am feeling more at home with like creativity, and being more open to the possibility that I can create things or even just be in a way that feels more or less scared of creating. So I wrote a little poem thing inspired by...
It was neither a little or a thing.
It was a little poem thing or inspired by the silence that I often experience online from men in particular about gender issues.
Did any men even share that video?
Stuart did.
I'm sorry, Stuart. I didn't see.
But I think the rest of them were women. I'm sorry if I forgot, if you're listening and you're a man and you shared it. I had some men comment and like it. But yeah, I felt very vulnerable to be sharing something like that I don't feel qualified, in inverted commas, qualified to make and or share. But it was very validating and I feel very excited to see where my creativity goes next.
I'm excited to see that too, because I feel like your talents are so wide ranging, especially with writing. And I know you always said, you know, you might have done English at uni and things,
but I think I feel very like I cringe when I hear like my talents are wide ranging, because I feel like instead of putting all my eggs in one basket, I put like half an egg in lots of baskets and don't perfect any of those things and don't do any of them well. I just do a lot of things.
You do them all really well. Yes. Can I just say?
Thank you.
But isn't that funny? Because it's like you could just do the trumpet thing, but you could just do it the same amount of well. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Who's to say you would suddenly be way better at the trumpet?
Yeah.
Or way better at poetry?
Literally.
That poetry is so informed by everything else.
Yeah. That's what I'm starting to feel more.
It's so cool.
That I like thinking of myself as a creative because they do all inform each other.
Yeah.
Like, and the podcast is a creative project.
Apparently.
Apparently so.
Apparently so.
Wow. What is your win of the week, Hattie?
I don't know what to say. Watched this 4-0 Topra the other day. This isn't a win, this is just a thing. It was an opera composed of just 4 notes. It was like A, B, D and E or something like that. A, B, D and G. It was quite boring, actually.
I was going to ask.
They were like, there's so much variation. And I was like, is that? Not that much, actually. Not that much variation.
Was it very modern?
Yeah, it was like 50 years ago it was written.
So not very modern.
Not that modern. But like for opera, I guess. Yeah. A moderner thing. Win of the week. I just don't know. I don't feel like I've won much this week.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I haven't really. I haven't felt in a very celebratory mood. I guess I've continued to look after myself valiantly. You know, and sometimes that feels quite hard.
Yeah.
But we're doing it. And it was a massive win to wake up this morning and like turn my computer on and start doing stuff. So I think that is fairly major.
Yeah.
I don't feel like bad days dictate my week anymore, whereas they used to. I can't believe we've made it to the end, Rebecca, of our marathon.
What marathon?
Podcasting marathon.
We literally recorded 2 episodes.
It feels like a marathon.
It does, yeah. We haven't done it in a while. Tired. To be fair.
We've done amazingly.
Well done, us.
Well done, us. My shoes, are they new?
No.
They're so cute.
I've had them for like 2 years. I wear them every day, Hattie.
Oh. Can I try them on?
Yeah. Okay, and with that, I feel like we usually do an announcement at the end. No, yeah, you know what to do. Follow us, whatever.
Thank you. Well, you probably already do follow us.
That's true.
Well, actually, you might not. You could help us get to 5,000. 4,000.
$100,000.
These are quite comfy, actually.
It fits. And with that, she turned back into a princess.
They've got a chubby cankle. I can't zip them up.
Goodbye.